Khaled, you've done an immense amount of research on China, Japan, North, and South Korea. What would you say are some additional social conflicts happening right now in East Asia?
So really in East Asia, the dynamics are more focused on militaristic buildup and also economics. So it's not to say that there isn't much conflict. I mean, there is. I mean, most of the conflict that occurs socially is a result of, particularly if you look at Japan and South Korea, for instance, it's the result of historical tensions. So as many of you are aware, Japan had colonized Korea, the Korean Peninsula, during the Second World War. And really the main concern among Japanese and South Korean leaders previously was the concern of comfort women. So comfort women were females brought over from the Korean Peninsula to act as quote-unquote sex slaves for the Imperial Army during the Second World War. This was a huge concern in South Korean-Japanese relationship for quite a while. And, you know, regardless of Japan's multiple efforts on multiple occasions trying to rectify the issue, apologized profusely several times, spent millions of dollars on programs to assist those comfort women who are still living. And recently, you know, they've come over a settlement, I believe. I don't recall the exact details of the arrangement. However, there's some sort of settlement where some sort of political solution has been achieved to deal with this cultural issue divide. And then another issue has been, and this kind of ties into the military, to security and defense, is Japan's history of imperialism in the past, where it almost conquered a large portion of Asia, its large army, and it was forced to disarm after the Second World War. We now see Japan becoming more assertive in its defense policy. Its constitution prohibits it from engaging in military endeavors abroad, only for the purpose of self-defense, and also in operating alongside allies in conflicts. It's attempted to augment its constitution to increase the role of its self-defense forces to operate overseas. This has been a significant concern among Japan's allies in the region, and also its neighbors. South Korea has been concerned. They've been concerned by China. And also there's been issues surrounding Japan's support. Japanese government visits to the Yasukuni Shrine, which was a shrine developed in the 80s and the 90s, that honored Japan's war dead who fought during the Second World War. Unfortunately, it does honor war criminals, and that's been a concern for Japan's neighbors' visits by the government. And that is an issue in Japan's relation with its neighbors.
In terms of politics, economics, and the culture of East Asia, how would you say East Asian societies today play a profound role in international relations?
Well, I mean, you know, if you look at China, they hold a large portion of the U.S. debt, almost trillions of dollars in U.S. debt. You know, we have emerging economies in Japan, South Korea emerging. They're one of the top economies in the world producing technological goods, vehicles, and other types of technology. You know, we see China becoming more assertive in its economic development, and that's been giving it the courage to become more assertive in its military strength. And then we also see, you know, change the dynamics between, you know, North Korea, South Korea, and Japan, where, you know, we're looking at, you know, a country such as North Korea, situated by a very developed, highly developed industrial nation in the south, where it's a thriving, you know, economy. And we have the threat of a North Korean state, which is brutal dictatorship, and which the transition between the parties has been, between sort of Kim Jong-un and his father previously, has been very tumultuous and very uneven, and it has nuclear weapons. So those are the dynamics of the situation.
Khaled, moving on, what are some of your upcoming projects that you plan on working on while here at the NATO Association of Canada?
So I am working on the Canada's Next Fighter Conference. So we are looking to have a discussion on that topic. So what is Canada doing in terms of developing the next fighter craft to replace its CF-18s? So we're going to hopefully bring together a discussion on that topic for individuals within the defense industry, hopefully within government.
I currently work at OMX, and I have to say that I'm really excited to see what happens with this project. I know that you've been actively involved here at
right.
the NATO Association of Canada. You previously were a program editor here as well. Would you be able to talk about your previous experience with us?
So, currently, I'm the editor of the NATO Crisis Program. program. I had been involved with the Inuit Association of Canada a few while back, and, you know, to be honest, most of my work here has been focused on the programs. So right now I'm the editor of the Inuit Arctic Crisis. I've given you guys sort of a sense of what it entails, what it attempts to do. And currently as well, I do a lot of pieces on nuclear non-proliferation, terrorism, and East Asian security. And I'm hoping to get my ideas out there, get my ideas out to the world in terms of what are the implications of these issues, and to really give Canadians a greater awareness of how the issues impact them, and how we at the Native Association of Canada, you know, attempt to give them a sense of that, and to show them, give them a further understanding of NATO's role, Canada's role in NATO, Canada's role in international affairs. Right, so those are really the main aims, to really share a lot of the expertise that I have on these issues with our fellow Canadians, and to give them a greater understanding, greater insight into some of the global challenges that, you know, that could potentially be affecting them.
For those who are interested in pursuing a graduate degree in international relations and affairs, what is the best advice you can provide to the students out there?
The best advice that I would say is write as much as you can. Really improve your writing skills, because when you're in grad school, they really need someone who is a fluent communicator, who can communicate large pockets of information into a single article, someone who can effectively bring their own ideas to the table. But also, they require someone to be able to work in a team environment. And in my program, the Master Global Affairs Program, U of T, the majority of our work was team-based, and it really helped strengthen my team-building skills. So teamwork, writing, communication, those are really the three primary skills that you have to excel at to be able to succeed in grad school, I think.
I strongly agree. I completed my master's in public service at the University of Waterloo, and as a result of completing that degree, I was provided with many opportunities to collaborate with my fellow colleagues, on group projects, and I strongly emphasize collaborating with people on team projects, because it's a great way to not only learn more about project management, but you'll always have an opportunity to learn more about someone else's strengths. You know, oftentimes when working on conferences, roundtables, or events, it's oftentimes good to collaborate with individuals who have skills that you can build on. With my experience here at the NATO Association of Canada, I've been fortunate enough to work on a lot of upcoming conferences, roundtables, and events. And one of the upcoming roundtables that we have tomorrow with Reza Akhlaqi, as I mentioned before, will focus on the Saudi-Iranian dynamics. You were kind enough to help me out with posting on the NATO Association of Canada's events page. Wow. And through your networks as well, you contacted all of your friends and colleagues at the Monk School of Global Affairs. So I greatly appreciate your help, Khaled. Yeah. I can certainly say that you're a great team player, and yeah, I really do look forward to collaborating with you on upcoming projects here.
Well, thank you, Magdalena. It's a pleasure working with you. Really, you know, it's really the main thrust of any degree, any job in international affairs is teamwork. And, you know, you have to be able to work with other different dynamics. You have to be able to empower others, in some cases take a leadership role, you know, help others also, achieve their goals in the project, and also empower others to take a lead in certain areas and to work together hand in hand.
Khaled, another question I wanted to ask you focuses on the aspect of pursuing a career in international relations. So for the students out there who are perhaps considering pursuing a profession in international relations, what is the best advice you can provide to those out there who are considering the potential?
So really the best advice I can give people trying to pursue a career in international affairs, try to get yourself out there in as many experiences as you can. So that would be global conferences, that would be global delegations. I know we have a few things in Canada. I know we have the Young Diplomats of Canada. I know we have other type youth forums. Those are really the best vehicles from which to really spark a career in international affairs. You're getting yourself out there. You're learning a lot from others in the field. You're engaging with others. And I think, you know, engaging on one-on-one in these sessions is probably a very valuable experience for you. And I think, as well, try to get your pieces out there, your opinions heard. Go on Twitter, try to start a blog, maybe engage in some research projects. And I think those are really the main areas you need to really focus on. And that'll help you to strengthen both your ability to communicate and also your expertise on certain topics. I think expertise is key when it comes to a career in international affairs, career in foreign service. And I think by developing that expertise, it makes you a very suitable and a very worthwhile candidate.
I strongly agree with you, and I oftentimes advise students to look at various associations and organizations out there who will provide you with an opportunity to network. Here at the NATO Association of Canada, we provide memberships to students, young professionals, to anyone who's interested in engaging in world issues. As a result of obtaining a membership, you're provided with an opportunity to attend a lot of these events and conferences, roundtables that we have happening throughout the year. It's a great way to network with people. It's a great way to interact with the current program editors. And not only that, it's a great way for you to become more engaged in the community and to have your voice heard.
I agree 100%. I think if you can try to get a hold of those opportunities, I think those will be very valuable in your quest for a job in international affairs.
Khaled, I want to sincerely thank you for this interview. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Would you like to leave any final words with our listeners today?
Really the main final words is that for those of you trying to seek a career in international affairs, for those of you really interested in that, I say go for it. I say try to get involved in any opportunities you can. Just, try to read up as much as you can on global affairs. Keep active. Keep aware, I think you'll be successful if you can keep those. So, Mike Glenn, I just want to say thank you for bringing me on the air. It was a pleasure to speak to our viewers here at your Global Horizons program, and I'm hoping we can be able to back on the air at some point again.
You certainly will. It's been a pleasure, Colin. Thank you.
Thank you.